Okay, well, everybody knows. Here we go. Say it with me if you'd like. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. And it's a brand new book. Actually, I guess you could say it's a brand new old book. This is one of those books that has it goes way back. And, of course, it's called Vayikra in the Hebrew because that's the first word in the book. And it says, Vayikra al Moshe. So, somebody did something. It's, in fact, it's Yod-Heh Vav-Heh that did this. He called unto Moshe, and he spoke to him out of the tent of meeting, and he said the following. Now, let's come back to what he said here in just a second, because right as we start the book, there are some interesting things that should at least stand out, especially if we have the Hebrew in front of us, as opposed to just the English. One of them is the so-called jots and tittles. The scribal notations, the things that are in the Hebrew, but they don't translate because they just, they don't make any sense in any other language. For example, the word Vayikra here is spelled, the end has a little teeny, smaller than normal, aleph at the end. And why is that? And the answer is, there's lots of speculation about it. Probably the most reasonable, or the one that I've heard the most often, I guess, is that it's there's two ways to say, and somebody called somebody. And essentially, it could be just kind of a chance happening. We see Vayikar, like, oh, hey, ho, look over there. There's Bill. Oh, hi. As opposed to calling somebody specifically and doing so in love. And the ending with the aleph at the end is the latter. Now, why is it small then? And the claim is, well, there's a couple of things. Maybe it's just that Moshe is kind of a meek and an unassuming fellow. That's the rabbinic explanation that seems to be kind of the most popular. But remember, he is calling specifically to Moshe out of the tent of meeting. Normally, you'd think somebody being called specifically by the creator of the universe out of the tent of meeting would be a big deal. So that's why the interesting small aleph, at least, kind of does kind of stick out at us. Well, what does he say once he's called? He says, speak unto Debar, all of B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, say to them the following. When any man of you brings an offering unto Yahuwah, then what you're going to do is you shall bring an offering of the cattle, or even of the herd or of the flock. So there's an offering that's going to be offered here. Now, why is this interesting? Well, I guess probably one of the things that that to me is important is that the word there is korban in the Hebrew. And it is not the same as the word that is used for sacrifice. And to a great extent, I'm going to suggest there really is a difference between korban, an offering, and a sacrifice. And a lot of times those distinctions get blurred. A lot of them, English Bibles just translate it all as sacrifice. And there is a difference. And then, of course, when you get to places like Yeshua's sacrifice once and for all, and that means it's over and there's no more, well, then why did they continue? Why does all kinds of references, and Paul didn't criticize it, to the evening and the morning offerings in the temple. People still made various kinds of offerings afterwards. I suspect there'll be offerings made again. Is this an abomination or not? Well, there's a difference between a sacrifice and an offering. Furthermore, there's a difference between a sacrifice for unintentional sin, as we're going to see throughout this book, and intentional, deliberate rebellion to him, for which there's only one sacrifice, not an offering at all. So, let's continue. If this offering is to be an olah, a burnt offering, something that's lifted up from the herd, well, then it's to be a male without blemish. He brings it to the door of the tent of meeting that it might be acceptable before Yahuwah. Lifnei Yahuwah, literally before his face. But that's kind of the root word of before, is before someone's face. It's right there. You can see it. Now, there's one other thing I think is interesting, and I'll point this out too. In general, we're going to see that a lot of the offerings are specified to be a male. Sometimes it's a male of the first year or a male of a certain age, without blemish, almost always without blemish. But the key is, and this is kind of interesting, you don't understand this, at least I didn't understand it until I raised goats for a while, recognized it with sheep and with cattle, it's kind of similar. People that have flocks will realize, you know what? Pretty soon you find out a female in the herd is quite a bit more valuable than a male. In the case of goats or cattle, cows, heifers, they can give milk and they can have babies. Whereas you just need one bull or one steer won't do it. One bull or one billy goat can take care of a whole bunch of females. So you don't need the extras nearly so much. And that is, I think, at least part of the reason. There may be others. I'm not claiming to know all of what's there. But I do know that, offering a male without blemish is certainly something that is a lot more readily accomplished because there's a lot more of them that people are willing to give up. Okay, what's going to happen? He shall lay his hand upon the head of the olah, the animal that is to be lifted up as a burnt offering. And it shall be accepted for him to make atonement for him. And he shall kill the bullock before Yahuwah. And Aaron's sons, the Kohanim, the priests, shall present the blood, that dash the blood all around against the altar at the door of the tent of meeting. And then he flays the burnt offering, cuts it into pieces, and the sons of Aaron the priest put fire upon the altar, and they lay the wood in order upon the fire. And Aaron's sons, the Kohanim, they lay the pieces, the head, the suet, in order upon the wood that's on the fire upon the altar. But the innards, the legs, those he shall wash with water. Priests will make the whole thing smoke on the altar for an olah, lifted up, a burnt offering, an offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Le Yahuwah. Now, if his offering is of the flock, whether it's of the sheep or of the goats, for an olah, a burnt offering, he offers, guess what? A male without blemish. And he shall kill it on the side of the altar to the north before Yahuwah, and Aaron's sons, the Kohanim, shall dash its blood against the altar round about. This is going to sound very familiar, and what he's doing is repeating the process for a sheep or a goat as opposed to a cow or cattle. He shall cut it. He shall cut it into pieces. Priests lay them with its head and its suet in order on the wood upon the altar. The innards and the legs again washed with water. The priest shall offer the whole, make it smoke upon the altar. It is an olah, a burnt offering, made by fire, a sweet savor, Le Yahuwah. Now, if his offering to Yahuwah is a burnt offering of fowls, birds, then he shall bring his offering of either turtle doves or of young pigeons. The priest brings it under the altar. And he pinches off its head, makes it smoke on the altar, and the blood thereof shall be drained out on the side of the altar. Then he takes away the crop and the feathers, casts it beside the altar on the east part in the place where the ashes are. Then he shall rend it by the wings, but do not divide it asunder. And the priest makes it smoke upon the altar, on the wood that's upon the fire. It is an olah, a burnt offering, an offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. So there's chapter 1. The second chapter says this. Now here's another one of those interesting renderings in the English. It says, ve nefesh. And what? That word nefesh means soul, right? And when a soul brings a meal offering unto Yahuwah. Let's pause. The English just says when anyone brings a meal offering. I always think it's kind of interesting that a living soul is referenced here. And as some of you know, I hearken back to piloting and what was done with a flight plan. Years ago, I remember being kind of surprised by this, but there is a legal difference, and it's worth pointing out. The flight plan doesn't say how many people on board, how many entities on board, how many corporate things, right? Because a person is a corporate thing. We think a person means a living entity, but it doesn't have to be. A corporation is a person, so far as what is now called law is concerned. But the FAA flight plan doesn't ask that. It asks specifically how many souls are on board. And that really is a big difference. So I think it's funny that if an entity which thinks that it can create things that live forever recognizes the difference between something with a soul and something without a soul, it's kind of nice to point it out when we see it in Scripture too. So it says, when a soul brings a meal offering, a mincha is the Hebrew word there, unto Yahuwah, his offering is to be a fine flour. He pours oil upon it, and he puts frankincense on it, and he brings it to Aaron's sons, the Kohanim, and he shall take thereof a handful of this fine flour and of the oil, together with the frankincense, and the priest, the Kohen, shall make the memorial part thereof, in other words, a portion, smoke upon the altar, an offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. But what about the rest? The rest, the part that's left over, is for Aaron. It belongs to Aaron and his sons. It is a thing most kadosh, set apart, of the offerings of Yahuwah made by fire. So this is something that Aaron and his sons will have as part of their due. When you bring a meal offering baked in the oven, It shall be unleavened cakes of fine flour mingled with oil, or unleavened wafers spread with oil. Key word here, of course, is unleavened. There's no leavening in this offering. If your offering is a meal offering baked on a griddle, again, fine flour but unleavened, mingled with oil. So we got this common thread here. It's unleavened. It's unleavened. It's fine. So there's no chametz in it. It's made with fine flour and it has oil. He breaks it in pieces, pours oil thereon. It is a mincha. And if the offering, the meal offering, is of the stewing pan, it's made with what else? Fine flour with oil. Bring it, the meal offering that's made of these things, unto Yahuwah, and it'll be presented unto the Kohen, the priest, and he shall bring it under the altar. Now, if the priest shall take off from the meal offering the memorial part thereof, in other words, that portion, and sometimes you'll hear the word challah, and that's what's done with bread, right? It's a piece that's taken off, and he makes that smoke upon the offer. An altar, an offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. But that which is left, you can probably guess, which is left of the meal offering belongs to Aaron and his sons. Again, it says, it is a thing most kadosh, set apart holy, of the offerings of Yahuwah made by fire. No mincha, or meal offering, which you shall bring unto Yahuwah, shall be made with leaven. There you go. We've kind of seen this pattern, but now it's going to be made explicit. No leaven. For you shall make no leaven nor any honey smoke as an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. As an offering of first fruits, you can bring them unto Yahuwah, but they shall not come up for a sweet savor on the altar. So the mincha unleavened. Every meal offering of yours, the mincha, you shall season with salt. Nor shall you offer the salt of the covenant of your El to be lacking from any meal offering. With all your offerings, all of your korban, you shall offer salt. And it says, now this one's interesting, it says ve'im. Ve'im. Sometimes that's rendered if, but the Hebrew scholar Rashi says, no, in this case, you got to make sure you understand that's when. And when you bring your meal offering of first fruits unto Yahuwah, you shall bring for the mincha of your first fruits corn in the ear, parched with fire, groats of the fresh ear, and if you put and you shall put oil upon it and lay frankincense thereon. It is a mincha, and the Kohen shall make the memorial part of that smoke, the groats and of the oil thereof, with all the frankincense thereof. It is a meal offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. Chapter 3, we're going to talk about a different kind of offering. Now, notice what we're doing is outlining several different kinds of korban here. Again, this is korban. If the offering is, but in this case it says, if the offering is a zebach of shalamim. So here's one of those places where there's overlap. If the offering is a sacrifice, a zebach, this time of shalamim, peace offerings, if he offers of the herd, whether it's male or female, he shall offer it without blemish before Yahuwah. So that is consistent. It might be a female or male. And he shall lay his hand upon the head of the offering and kill it at the door of the tent of meeting. And Aaron's sons, the Kohanim, shall dash the blood against the altar round about. He shall present the sacrifice of shalamim, and here that word again is zebach. It's an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. The fat that covers the innards and all the fat that's on them, the two kidneys, the fat that's on them, which is by the loins, the lobe above the liver, he shall take away hard by the kidneys. And Aaron's sons shall make it smoke upon the altar, upon the burnt offering, the olah, which is upon the wood that's on the fire. It is an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, le Yahuwah. And if his offering for a sacrifice, again, that word zebach here, unto Yahuwah is of the flock, whether it's male or female, again, it is to be without blemish. If he brings a lamb for his offering, then you shall present it before Yahuwah. He lays his hand upon the head of the offering, kills it in the tent of meeting, before the tent of meeting, and Aaron's son shall dash that blood thereof against the altar all around. And he shall present the zebach of shalamim, of the peace offerings, an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah, the fat tail, all of it. And he shall take away hard by the rump bone, and the fat that covers the innards, all the fat that's on them. The two kidneys, the fat on them, which is by the loins, and the lobe above the liver, which he shall take away by the kidneys. The priest then makes all of this smoke upon the altar. It is the food of the offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. Now, if his offering is a goat, then he shall present it before Yahuwah. Again, he lays his hand upon the head and kills it before the tent of the meeting. And the sons of Aaron shall dash the blood thereof against the altar round about. You notice that what we're seeing here is a large repetition of most of the words. Can't help but think there's something significant. It's like the process is being outlined over and over again so that we get the idea that this process must be important. He presents thereof the offering made by fire unto Yahuwah, the fat that covers the innards, the fat that's on the innards, the two kidneys, the fat that's on them, which is by the loins, the lobe above the liver, takes away by the kidneys. And guess what? The priest makes them smoke upon the altar. It is the food of the offering made by fire. For a sweet savor, all the fat is Yahuwah's. Now that's a little bit different, but it's making this clear. The fat, the part that is being smoked, is going to rise up. It's an olah. It is for Yahuwah. This, it says, here's the last verse in the chapter, and it's important because that's the kind of thing that we tend to ignore. We've been taught in the whore church, wrongly of course, that all this stuff is done away with. Even though there is no place to do it, it says, this shall still be a perpetual statute. Now that word, right? Huchat olam. Throughout your generations, in all your dwellings, that you shall eat neither fat nor blood. Now wait a second. Okay, we cannot make these offerings. We don't have the place to do those. We don't have the Kohanim, at least as far as we know, the Kohanim, their bloodline may exist somewhere, and there are DNA markers, but for all practical purposes, we can't do a lot of what we've been talking about, but wait, this part we can. It shall be a perpetual statute, huchat olam, throughout your generations and all your dwellings. What? That you shall eat neither fat nor blood. I'm going to suggest when he says it's a perpetual statute and we're not supposed to eat it, it probably means it still applies and we're not supposed to eat it. Next chapter 4 says, and Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said the following, speak unto the B'nai Israel, and say to them. Now, this is another one that is interesting, because it's the first of the places in the Torah. We're going to see several of these. It's a continuing concept, where there are various conditions and procedures and processes that he's going to lay out for when people sin, but in general, not in every explicit case. There are some exceptions. We'll talk about those, at least one in this Torah portion. But when someone sins through error, then we have something specific. Well, what about when it's not an error? Ah, see, that's the difference. We're not going to talk about that yet. This is for people who sin in error. Speak to the B'nai Israel. Tell them, if anyone sins, be shigaga, which is an interesting word. Be is in, right? Shigaga. They didn't know it, and they done it anyway. Beshagaga, in any of the things which Yahuwah has commanded not to be done, but instead he does one of them, any one of them. Well, we're going to hear about various cases of people who can do the Beshagaga thing in error. For example, first one, verse 3, if it is the anointed Kohen who sins so as to bring guilt on the people, then let him offer for his sin, which he has sinned, a young bull without blemish. So here's a Kohen, and he doesn't know it, he messes up. He offers a young bull without blemish unto Yahuwah for a chatat, a sin offering. He brings the bull under the door of the tent of meeting before Yahuwah. He lays his hand upon the head of the bullock, and he kills it before Yahuwah. The anointed priest shall take of the blood of the bull, bring it to the tent of meeting, and the priest shall dip his finger in the blood and sprinkle the blood 7 times before Yahuwah in front of the veil of the sanctuary, the mikdash. And the priest shall put of the blood upon the horns of the altar of sweet incense before Yahuwah in the tent of meeting. All the remaining blood of the bull he shall pour out at the base of the altar of burnt offering, which is at the door of the tent of meeting. All the fat of the bull of this chatat, this sin offering, he takes off of it, the fat that covers the innards, fat on the innards, the two kidneys, fat that's on them by the loins, the lobe above the liver. Hey, this is something we've heard before, right? Same kind of fat, same places. He takes this away by the kidneys, as it is taken from off the ox of the sacrifice of Shalamim. So, oh yeah, here's a reference. We've seen something similar. Now it's for the katat, the sin offering, similar process. And the priest shall make them smoke upon the altar of burnt offering. But the skin of the bullock, all its flesh and its head, with its legs and its innards and its dung, the whole bullock, all of it, that shall be carried forth without the camp, outside of the camp, in other words, unto a clean place where the ashes are poured out, and burn it on wood with fire. Where the ashes are poured out, this is the place that it shall be burnt. So basically, the part that doesn't get lifted up, the skin, the innards, the head, all that stuff, and the dung, that is carried outside the camp, burned in a clean place. So that's the process we've just seen for a Kohen who sins Be'eshagaga. All right? Here's another case. And if the whole congregation, Kol Edat, the whole assembly, congregation, Kol Edat of Israel shall err, and the thing is hidden from the eyes of the assembly, they don't get it, and they do any of the things which Yahuwah has commanded they shouldn't have done, but they're guilty. When the sin wherein they have sinned becomes known, then the assembly shall offer, this sounds partly familiar, a young bull for a sin offering, a chetat. They bring it before the tent of meeting. Now, in this case, who is going to lay their hands on the head? It's the elders of the Edat, the congregation, that do this. They lay their hands on the head of the bull before Yahuwah, and the bullock shall be killed before Yahuwah. I find this interesting, and you notice that one of the things here is that when somebody sins unintentionally, the person who sins, in general, we're going to see the specific cases, lay their hands upon the thing that is going to essentially die in their place, the blood that is going to be shed to make atonement. Now, there's a pattern here, and I think the pattern is important. We will hear all kinds of people say, well, we ignore the pattern, we don't care about it, we're going to ignore the specifics, we're going to ignore all the little parts that we don't really want to understand because we're not interested in studying to show ourselves approved. But I'm going to suggest, you know, that's exactly the opposite of the attitude we ought to have. What we're seeing here are some things that are going to make very clear why the sacrifice of Yeshua is different. And matter of fact, why he did it voluntarily, and why so many elements that we tend to ignore are vital to understanding what he really did, as opposed to what people say and what people draw conclusions that aren't consistent with Scripture. So, when the sin that they have sinned, remember, this was Be'eshagaga. They didn't know, but they've done it. They get this young bull, they bring it before the tent of meeting, and this time it's the elders that shall lay their hands on it. The bull shall be killed before Yahuwah. And now it's the Kohen, the anointed Kohen. He brings the blood of the bull to the tent of the meeting, and the priest shall dip his finger in it. Now this is a familiar pattern. He sprinkles it seven times before Yahuwah in front of the veil, puts that blood upon the horns of the altar before Yahuwah, which is in the tent of meeting, and all the remaining blood poured out at the base of the altar burnt offering. Yep, this sounds familiar. At the door of the tent of meeting, the fat thereof he takes off, makes that smoke upon the altar. This he shall do with the bullock, as he did with the bullock of the hatat sin offering. So he does here. The priest shall make atonement for them, and they shall be forgiven. They're forgiven for what? Unintentional sin. They didn't know any better. Be'eshagaga. They sinned in ignorance. Now, he shall carry forth the bull outside the camp, burn it, as he burned the first bull. It is a sin offering for the assembly, Edat, or the kahal, in this case, is the word that's used there, the assembly. How about, what other options do we have? Oh yeah, here's one. When a ruler, a nasi, a prince, when he sins, and he does Be'eshagaga in error, any one of the things which Yahuwah his El has commanded, he should not to have done, and yep, he's guilty. If his sin, which he has sinned, be known to him, in other words, once he figures it out, it's no longer hidden, he is to do the same thing. He shall bring for his offering a goat, again, a male without blemish, and he shall lay his hand. Who's doing this? The fellow, the ruler. The Nasi, who has done the wrong thing, but he didn't know any better, he lays his hand upon the head of the goat, kills it in the place where they kill the burnt offering, the Olah, before Yahuwah. It is now a Chatat, a sin offering. The Kohen shall take of the blood of the sin offering. Guess what he's going to do? With the blood of the sin offering, he puts it on the horns of the altar, and the remaining blood thereof shall be poured out at the base of the altar of burnt offering. Now, wait a minute. Huh. Notice? Do we see something missing here? The last couple of times, he has taken the blood, and he's done this seven times thing with it. But it skips that this time. Now, honestly, if you ask the question why, I'm not sure. But when we see differences, I will suggest, as we look at this pattern, we should see so much of it is a repetition. But here's one part that is almost glaring by it's not there. Priest shall take of the blood of the sin offering with his finger. He puts it on the horns of the altar of burnt offering, and the remaining blood thereof he pours out at the base of the altar of burnt offering. Well, that's similar, but where's the seven times sprinkling? All the fat thereof he makes smoke upon the altar, as the fat of the sacrifice of Shalamim. The priest shall make atonement for him as concerning his sin, and he shall be forgiven. How about this? Is there another case? Yeah. If any one, and in fact in this case it's not just any one, it's another nephesh, a living soul. Someone of the people of the land, Ha'am. And they do what? They sin be'eshagaga, in error, and in doing any of the things which Yahuwah has commanded not be done. So they did something they should not have, and now they're guilty. They sinned in ignorance, be'eshagaga. If this sin, which he has sinned, is known to him, so when he knows about it, now he has the obligation to do something, then he shall bring for his offering a goat. Now, we're going to see a difference here, too. This ought to leap off at us. A female without blemish for his sin, which he has sinned. What was it I was suggesting earlier? A lot of times it's a male goat, and the male goats are honestly less valuable. This female goat, that's a bigger deal. This female goat is probably, it's without blemish, so presumably it's not an infertile female or something like that. It might be that it's too young, he doesn't know, but in any case, he is offering a, looks like a more valuable offering. That's just my opinion on it here. Then he lays his hand upon the head of the sin offering, and he kills the katat, the sin offering, in the place of the burnt offering. The priest then shall take of the blood with his finger and put it upon the horns of the altar of burnt offering, and all the remaining blood thereof he shall pour out the base. Again, what's missing? Yeah, the sprinkling seven times part. All the fat thereof he shall take away, as the fat is taken away from off the shalamim, the peace offerings, and the priest shall make it smoke upon the altar for a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, and the priest shall make atonement for him, and he shall be forgiven. Now, if he brings a lamb for his chatat, his sin offerings, guess what? It, too, is a female without blemish. But the process sounds familiar. He shall lay his hand upon the head of the sin offering, kill it for a sin offering in the place where they kill the burnt offering, and the priest shall take of the blood of the sin offering with his finger, put it upon the horns of the altar of burnt offering, no sprinkling seven times. All the remaining blood thereof he pours out at the base, and all the fat shall take away, the fat as the fat of the lamb is taken away from the sacrifice of Shalamim. The priest makes them smoke upon the altar, upon the offerings of Yahuwah made by fire, and the priest shall make atonement for him as touching his sin that he has sinned, and he shall be forgiven. Let me ask a question. Because Paul talks about, you know, once we have become known, there's no more longer remaining a sacrifice for sin. Guess what he's talking about? Once you know it, you can't very well say, I didn't know it anymore. That is one of the specifics that tends to get overlooked, and it's one of the things reasons I'm pointing all this out, because there are so many writings of Paul that people, they read these things, they ignore the context because they don't know it, they don't care about it, and then they miss the bigger point. You can't very well sin intentionally over, unintentionally, over and over again and claim, I was be'eshagaga, I was in ignorance. Now, I guess there are probably some people, like if you're senile and pretending to be president, that could get away with doing the same thing over and over again because it doesn't matter whether you're doing it right or not. But on the other hand, for real people that have half a brain, you can't very well keep saying, I sinned in ignorance and doing the same thing when you should have known better. Chapter 5 is going to kind of summarize some of this. If anyone sins in that he hears the voice of adjuration, he being a witness, whether he's seen or known, if he does not utter it, then he shall bear his iniquity. In other words, you've got an obligation to speak up. If anyone touches, or here, if anyone touches any unclean thing, whether it's the carcass of an unclean beast, or the carcass of unclean cattle, or the carcass of unclean swarming things, and he's guilty, and it's hidden from him that he is in fact unclean, or if he touches the uncleanness of man, whatsoever his uncleanness be, wherewith he is unclean. In other words, there are several ways it could happen. And it's hidden from him. When he knows of it, well, he's guilty. or if anyone swears clearly with his lips to do evil or to do good. So in other words, if he swears to something that he shouldn't have, whether it's a man, he shall utter clearly with an oath, and it's hidden from him. Well, when he knows of it, he is guilty in one of these things, and it shall be. So here we are. There's a setup. All of these possible things that somebody might have done, be-shigaga. When he is found guilty, when he is known to be guilty in one of these things, he shall confess that wherein he has sinned. And he shall bring his forfeit unto Yahuwah for his sin which he has sinned. Again, guess what? It's a female from the flock, a lamb or a goat, for a chatat, a sin offering, and the priest shall make atonement for him concerning his sin. So this is, in fact, a fairly valuable offering, a sin offering. And so what do we hear next? Well, if he doesn't have enough, if he's too poor, if his means do not suffice for a lamb, well, then he shall bring his forfeit for that which he has sinned, two turtle doves, or two young pigeons unto Yahuwah, one for a chatat, sin offering, the other for an olah, a burnt offering. So this is a less expensive offering. Then he shall bring them unto the Kohen, who shall offer that which is for the chatat first. Pinches off its head close by its neck, but he does not divide it asunder in two. He shall sprinkle of the blood of the chatat upon the side of the altar. The rest of the blood is drained out at the base of the altar. This is the chatat. Then he prepares the second one for a burnt offering, an olah, according to the ordinance. The priest shall make atonement for him as concerning his sin which he sinned, and he shall be forgiven. Now, we got this third option. If his means do not even suffice for two turtle doves or two young pigeons, well, then he shall bring his offering for that which he has sinned. Here's a less expensive option for the poorest of the bunch. A tenth part of an ephah of fine flour for a sin offering, a chatat. No oil on this one. Nor shall he put any frankincense thereon. It is chatat. It's for a sin offering. And he brings it unto the Kohen. The Kohen shall take his handful of it as the memorial part thereof, make it smoke on the altar, upon the offerings of Yahuwah made by fire. It is chatat, a sin offering. And the priest shall make atonement for him as touching the sin which he sinned in any of these things, and he shall be forgiven. But the remnant, that is the priest's, as is the meal offering. And Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and here's what he said. Here's the words in red, or it should be in red. If anyone commits a trespass and sins, what? Through error, be-shigaga, in the holy things, the set-apart things, the kadosh things of Yahuwah, then he shall bring his forfeit unto Yahuwah, a ram without blemish out of the flock, according to your valuation in silver by shekels, after the show of the sanctuary, for a guilt offering. And he shall make restitution for that which he's done amiss concerning the holy thing. And he shall add the fifth part thereto, and give this unto the priest. So this is another part of a pattern we're going to see repeated. When someone does something that costs, and that as a result maybe they have broken something or acted carelessly or stolen something, they make it right, and they add a fifth part thereto. Well, we might say 20% now, but a fifth part to it. Not just the offering that is given unto Yahuwah, but there is a fifth part added to it. The priest makes atonement for him with the ram of the guilt offering, and he shall be forgiven. And if anyone sins or do any of the things which Yahuwah has commanded not to be done, though he doesn't know it, right? What's it saying? Now, doesn't use the word here, but it's be-shigaga again. He doesn't know it again. But he's guilty and shall bear his Torahlessness, his iniquity. Then he shall bring a ram without blemish out of the flock, according to your valuation, for a guilt offering unto the priest, the Kohen. And the Kohen shall make atonement for him concerning the error which he committed, even though he didn't know it, and he shall be forgiven. It is a guilt offering because, get this, he is certainly guilty before Yahuwah. I just had a thought. Because this has been on my mind anyway this week. How about if we have a bunch of people that are sinning when it comes to the holy things before Yahuwah? They don't know, for example, that he doesn't like bunnies and eggs, and he doesn't like his Pesach being turned into a pagan fertility goddess feast and celebrated with a bunch of crap that is anathema to him, or worse, symbolic of child sacrifice. He is certainly guilty before Yahuwah. Think about that. But he's ignorant. All right, continuing here. Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, if anyone sins and commits a trespass against Yahuwah, Now, here is another example, and I've already kind of alluded to this. He deals falsely with his neighbor in a matter of deposit or of pledge or of robbery, or he has oppressed his neighbor. Or he has found that which is lost. Finders, keepers, losers, reapers, not in Torah. He's found something which was lost, but he's dealt falsely on that. Oh, I don't have it. I don't know where it is. Never saw it. And he swears to a lie in any of these things that a man does, and thereby he sins. Well, it shall be, if he has sinned and is guilty. Oh, I like this. This is one of those things that I would suggest, and I have, and I will continue to. The whole world, especially a criminal nation, would be a hell of a lot better off if we actually just walked in obedience to the Creator. Because what we have is the exact opposite of this. Listen carefully. If he has sinned and he's guilty, doesn't say he's found guilty in a court, which doesn't even have to be a court of law because we don't have those anymore, but he's just guilty. He ought to know it. Certainly the people that are involved know it. He's guilty. He shall restore that which he took by robbery, or the thing which he has gotten by oppression, or by falsehood, or by any number of ways, but oppression kind of covers a wide range of bases here, or the deposit which was deposited with him, or the lost thing which he found. So, he restores it. Or anything about which he has sworn falsely, he shall restore it in full. And guess what? Yep. He shall add to it the fifth part thereto. In other words, he doesn't just make it good, he adds 20% more, another fifth to it. Unto the person, unto him to whom it appertaineth, he shall give it in the day of his being guilty. Now, does this mean that some kind of a court or a bait den or something might have found him guilty? I don't think there's any question that that is true. But on the other hand, how about if it's just somebody who's halfway honest? He is, in fact, a thief, but he's been caught. At least he has the integrity to admit, yeah, I've been caught. That would, I think, constitute the day of his being guilty. He knows it. Everybody knows it. And if he is half a man or half of a person who is aware of his standing before Yah, he better make it right. He shall bring his forfeit unto Yahuwah. Okay, see, he has done this bad thing. He makes it right. He makes restitution to the person that he's harmed. But he still owes Yah for the transgression of the Torah. He shall bring his forfeit unto Yahuwah, a ram without blemish out of the flock, according to your valuation, for a guilt offering unto the priest, unto the Kohen. The priest shall make atonement for him before Yahuwah, and he shall be forgiven concerning whatsoever he does, so as to thereby be guilty. And with that, we come to the end of the chapter and the end of the Torah portion here. And again, what we're going to see as we go through this book of Leviticus or Vayikra are a number of things that we would say, well, they don't seem that important anymore. And maybe part of the reason why this society is such a stinking mess is because we've been lied to and told they're not important. And in fact, what Yahuwah is saying here is they are very important. If we understood the concepts behind some of these things, especially this idea of restitution that we end with, I can't help but think we would be in a heck of a lot better position as a society than where we are. How do you make restitution for killing people's children, poisoning them with deadly things that aren't vaccines, turning their little children into abominations before Yah? Yeah, that's a lot bigger question, isn't it? We only get to those massive places when we ignore even the small things to the point where people think, I can get away with it. Hell, there's no problem anymore. And there we go.